broadcasting live from the KSHP studios in the heart of Las Vegas, Nevada. It's time to get on the right side of sports betting. It's time for the Odds Couple.
Las Vegas Video Network, Scott Pritchard, live from KSHP, AM 1400, Las Vegas, Nevada, Sin City, joined by the general manager and sports wizard, Brett Grant. Brett, welcome.
The wizard. I don't have my hat, Scott. It's a great day. Welcome.
Happy to be here. Overcast skies, a bit rainy today in Las Vegas. We don't get much rain, but it never rains inside the studio here at KSHP Radio.
Not since we had the roof fixed.
That's a good thing. I'm glad you addressed that. Let's get started with what say you. College basketball championship game, 68 teams started in this three-week tournament. We're down to the final game, one time, Michigan, a number four seed, taking on the number one seed, Louisville. Now, Louisville is favored by four. The total for this game opened 137.5. The money has come in on the over. It's been bet up to 138, 138.5, 139. Brett, what say you?
Well, it's going to be a great game. And the one thing about this is you have a red-hot team in Michigan against a terrific team in Louisville. Both have been ranked number one in the country at one point in the season. Michigan started out 17-0. Louisville's a little banged up, obviously, without Ware. From a depth standpoint, you got Rick Pitino being in the Basketball Hall of Fame, inducted, announced today, going through. And you got John Beilein, a guy who's covered every game of the tournament so far. It should be a wonderful game tonight.
Now, Rick Pitino, the outstanding coach for the Louisville Cardinals, trying to become the first coach to win at two different schools for the national championship. I believe it was in 1996 when he knocked off, when he won with the Kentucky team. Right. So a lot at stake here for Louisville and Rick Pitino.
You know, as much as people talk about the Cinderellas this year, we still have two blue blood programs that are here in the national championship game. And Louisville, won, of course, won the 1986 national championship with Never Nervous Purvis Ellison leading the way. And, of course, Michigan won in 1989 with Gary Grant and that team. Didn't win with the Fab Five. A lot of people might think they did. But you got teams that have got rich basketball traditions and rich basketball history. And you got great point guards in tonight's game, too.
Boy, you're taking me back. 1986 seems like about 100 years ago. But, Never Nervous Purvis Ellison, a freshman for that Louisville team. And then, as you mentioned, 1989 with Michigan winning in overtime against Seton Hall. Mm-hmm. The Fab Five in 92 and 93, both of those teams made it to the Final Four, right, but did not win. So this Michigan team, I mean, Michigan is kind of a football school, but don't tell that to the basketball fans.
No, I tell you what, I mean, Big Blue Nation is, they're very good in all sports. And, you know, when you talk about college basketball this year, it's always been talked about how good the Big Ten was, and the Big Ten was the best conference. The Big East was right there with them. And the fact that we've got these two programs, these two conferences going at it in the national championship game should be a terrific atmosphere today.
This Michigan team, there are similarities between, say, this team fighting for a national championship against Louisville and the Fab Five from the early 90s, because while they don't have five freshmen on the team, they do have three freshmen and then two first-year players. So there are similarities.
Yeah, you're right. It's a very young team. And you look at, on the other side, from a Louisville standpoint, a very veteran team with their guard play, with Russ Smith and Peyton Sieven. Those guys, it seems like Sieven's been in college for about 12, 13 years. I can't wait for that matchup of Sieven versus Trey Burke tonight. It's going to be terrific.
Now, Trey Burke, the outstanding guard, he actually had a tough game. I mean, against Syracuse, 1-for-8 shooting. He missed a couple of critical free throws late in the contest. But guard play will definitely be a big factor in tonight's big game.
Well, I think it's the difference between the game with Syracuse versus the game we'll see tonight is that, you know, Burke's main job was getting inside that 2-3 zone of Syracuse and being able to kick out and hoping that, they're making some three-point shots. And, you know, to me, the best player of the tournament so far, especially for Michigan, has been the freshman McGarry. He's been absolutely terrific. And if he's able to have the same kind of game he's had, I think Michigan might be on the right side tonight.
As a professional sports bettor, I look at proven winners, and this Michigan team seeded four, taking on number one Louisville. Now, Louisville was the big favorite going in, but let us not forget the four teams, the top four seeds out of 68 that started this tournament 3 weeks ago. The odds of the final four teams getting to the final four, 47.5-1 against one team, Louisville, made it through. But on paper, they were the top seeded team in the entire field. Right. So they did get through. Michigan seeded 4 coming out of the Big Ten tough conference this year. But I look at, for me, I love proven winners, and I see Louisville being experienced. I love the fact that they apply the full court press. We're talking about a team on Saturday down 12 to Wichita State, 13:35 to go in the game. They turned it on late in the year, conference tournament, regular season game. I forget. It was Syracuse destroying Louisville at halftime, right. But that's the mark of a good team, a veteran team with a good head coach in Pitino to make adjustments within the confines right. of the game.
Well, he's got great experience, obviously. He's got NBA experience. He's been around the college game forever. And you're right. He's one of those guys that is able to make the adjustments on the fly. And you wonder if Greg Marshall from Wichita State on Saturday got caught up in the moment thinking, oh, we've got a chance to win this thing, and didn't make the adjustments that he needed to make in order for his team to withstand that barrage that Louisville did towards the end to get the lead back. But I think Wichita State probably went as far as they could go. But I think Greg Marshall's a terrific coach. You know, Michigan is playing at such a high level right now as well. You know, they're 5-0 against the spread. I mean, they've destroyed VCU, which a lot of people didn't think they'd be able to beat VCU. They everybody liked Syracuse, it seemed to me, that I talked to going into the game on Saturday. Yet Michigan was still the favorite, still covered, and took care of business very easily on Saturday, I thought, in that particular. Although they made it interesting by missing some free throws, but they still took care of it.
Well, it's a very good point that you bring up, Brett, because the fact is the line opened 2.5. The money was on Syracuse. It went from 2.5 to 2, down to 1.5. Michigan won the game 61-56. I played under 130 for the game. The total closed 128, and it fell, I believe, 117, 56. Or 61-56, I believe that adds up right. to 117. All I know is it was a winner chicken dinner.
There you go.
And I haven't missed too many meals.
No. Not this weekend, probably, huh?
Well, it's interesting that Louisville, based on how they got here, they destroyed the first 4 opponents, but then they ran to a buzzsaw against Wichita State, overcoming a double-digit deficit in the last 13 minutes of the game.
Yeah, and there's a couple games they didn't cover. Oregon covered against them, and obviously Wichita State did as well. So if you're looking at it in our 5 games, they're, 3-2 against the spread going in. But they had bloated lines in those games. They were a double-digit favorite in both of those games going in. It's a completely different animal when you're a double-digit favorite versus a smaller single-digit favorite, like tonight's game with a 4-point game, because that can be decided at the free throw line in the final couple of minutes. And you saw Wichita State at the end of the game, it probably, I thought earlier than they should have been, fouling Louisville and taking them to the free throw line. I thought there was a couple of possessions where they probably could have played defense for the 35 seconds, hoped for a missed shot, and then come back down without having to take those fouls, but extended the game and made that particular game, which I liked the under in that game, made it go over because of the free throws.
Yeah, it was interesting in that game, that Louisville game, because 46 seconds to go, you're down 3, Wichita right. State. Why? That would never happen in the NBA. Why? It's a one-possession game. Why? And again, I had the under in that game. So I was looking good, feeling good, until they decided to foul. Why would you do that?
I'm with you. I was thinking the same thing. And I'm going, well, going to lose this because they're fouling. It's a one-possession game. Why are we fouling?
They extended the game, and, of course, it's a moot point. But I have to say, with this Louisville team, what's interesting is they are a dead over team. 9 straight games have gone over the closing total.
Which will be interesting tonight with what the total going up from 138 opened, I believe, to now 139 plus. Well, you know, Michigan loves to shoot it and loves to shoot the outside shot. And if this game gets to be a transition game and Louisville will run based on how well they're doing defensively, Louisville will push tempo as well. But they're also a team, they've had plenty of games where they're scoring in the 50s and winning games 55, 53 and things like that. But you're right. Right now they are an over machine.
Well, both of these teams for the year have been dead overs. I mean, Michigan, 21 of their 36 documented have gone over the posted closing total. And Louisville, conversely, 19 and 14, including 9 straight over. So I think the money, based on the opening number of 137.5, the fact it's been bet up to 139. Of course, the odds makers were aware of these numbers when they posted at 137.5, right. But Joe Public and or Wise Guys driving that number up. Which is the same thing they did with Louisville on Saturday. It opened 131, bet up to 134. I bet under, because as a professional sports bettor, you want to be on the move early, over 131, or against the move late, under 134. Okay. And if you do nothing else but that, you're going to be in the game.
Sure. Well, I did the same thing. And I'm thinking tonight, You know, the interesting thing to me about if you look at college basketball as a whole this year, scoring was down across the board, mainly because guys couldn't shoot. And we see where guys don't make their free throws as well as they should back in the day. But I think part of it is people leaving early for the NBA. You lose talent, and then new guys coming in, getting acclimated to their new systems, new programs. Conference play, you're very familiar with your opponents. So when you see somebody for the second time or the third time in the conference tournament, you know what to expect from that team, and you know how to defend that team. So it brings scoring down. Tonight's a little bit different. If the pace is right from the get-go, you could have one of those games. But do you expect both teams to be in the 70s tonight? That's what you need to get to the total tonight, both teams to be in the 70s or a lopsided game with one team near 80. That's tough.
You're listening to The Odds Couple on the world-famous Vegas Video Network alongside Brett Grant. My name is Scott Pritchard, founder of PritchardsPicks.com, KSHP AM 1400 Radio. NBA basketball, interesting race, 5 games to go. Number 1, number 2 in the Western Conference. San Antonio leads Oklahoma City Thunder by 1 game. Oklahoma City, if they can tie the Spurs, they have the tiebreaker. What say you?
Well, the Thunder lost at home yesterday to the Knicks, didn't play very well. The Knicks have won, 12 in a row right now? And the Thunder beat the Spurs earlier in the week to get that tie situation. Then they turn around and lose at home to the Knicks. So now, and you look at San Antonio, Ginobili a little banged up. They got a couple of injuries, but I like San Antonio's ability. To me, they're the deepest team maybe in the history of the NBA. They are so deep. They just plug guys in. Greg Popovich does a wonderful job with that team. And I think if you look at Oklahoma City, obviously Durant and Westbrook, and then it's just whoever else might contribute, where San Antonio can go 8-9 deep and get the job done. I got to lean towards San Antonio to hang on to that edge.
I would actually agree with you because I mean,
shocking, I know.
Well, it's I don't want to make a habit of it.
Okay.
But I will say I respect that opinion because the San Antonio Spurs, I've always said Pop knows best. I love Greg Popovich, the coach of the Spurs. He just plugs people into the system. It's a proven, documented, mechanical process of a system that wins.
Right.
And they are banged up. Manu Ginobili may not be back until May. Tony Parker, MVP candidate, star player for the Spurs, hasn't played, may not play the next game or two. Let's take a look at the schedule. I mean, San Antonio Spurs, they're at the Denver Nuggets on Wednesday night. But interesting, their second leading scorer is gone, their star forward. Ty Lawson may or may not play. So Denver, 3 home losses, 4 home losses the entire year, a phenomenal team at home. Mm-hmm. I don't take them seriously come playoff time because it's a half-court set. We play in mud when the postseason starts. And Denver, they have a road losing record. So that's a game the Spurs could win.
No, I agree with you. And the thing about the Spurs is, if we talk about those interchangeable parts, and the question is, the Spurs have been a number one seed before and fallen flat in the postseason. So do you go as hard out as you can to get that number one overall seed and then maybe expend some energy that you're going to need in the playoffs? Or do you not worry about being number one or number two and let's make a deep run into the postseason?
That's the million-dollar question. You talk to the Spurs, you talk to the Thunder. They both want the number one seed. I think the Thunder want it more. I know Popovich and the Spurs, they want to be healthy. But I'm telling you, if it comes down to a Game 7 in the Western Conference Finals, huge, huge advantage. I mean, the Spurs and the Thunder both practically unbeatable at home.
Right, but the Spurs are a team that on the road, I don't think they're afraid of that situation to be able to go there on the road. And I know you think about that now before the playoffs start, but once the playoffs start, it's day in, day out grind. And if you don't make it past the first round or the second round, it doesn't matter where you are because you're not going to make it to the Western Conference Finals. So there is, I mean, you got some older players on that Spurs team with Tim Duncan and obviously Ginobili out. Parker's not healthy. How much do you expend in energy to get to a number one seed if you lose in the first or second round and not get there?
Well, now, last year, the Spurs were the number one seed, and they were in the midst of an 18-game winning streak. They won their first 10 games in the playoffs, 4-0, 4-0, up 2-0 against the Thunder, went to Oklahoma City, and proceeded to lose 4 consecutive games, 2 at Oklahoma City, Game 5 at San Antonio, and then Game 6 at Oklahoma City. So, again, it's going to be so interesting. I look at this Oklahoma City Thunder team, and they're a very good shooting team.
Sure.
And they get to the free throw line, and Durant, no one's better from the free throw line. That's where he gets all of his points. Now, the Thunder played San Antonio in Oklahoma City just a few nights ago, and they were favored by 7.5. They ended up winning by 10. But in that contest, of course, Tony Parker, limited time. Manu Ginobili did not play. the Thunder did nothing more than defend their home court because the Spurs just hammered them by 20 maybe 3-4 weeks ago. Right. So they split during the regular season 2-2. These teams are evenly matched. So ultimately, I think if they meet in the Western Conference Finals, that the home court is huge.
Well, and the other factor is obviously whoever is not the number one seed has to play the Clippers more than likely in a second-round matchup, which is certainly going to be no easy shakes the way the Clippers are playing right now as well.
Well, the thing I look at with the Clippers, I don't think they rebound all that well. And Chauncey Billups, he's been out. He's a proven winner on that team. So as exciting as the Clippers are, I love CP3, Chris Paul. I love Blake Griffin. I love Jamal Crawford coming off the bench. But the concern I have with the Clippers, again, average road record. They don't rebound very well. And, I mean, I'm not sure that they're going to actually be alive in the second round because you look at 3, 4, 5 seeds, Memphis Grizzlies probably taking on the Clippers in the first round. Mm-hmm. Denver Nuggets probably will be seeded third. So that, you know, you're looking at 1 taking on 8. Right now, 8 is Utah.
Right.
Not the Laker girls, but the Utah Jazz.
Paula Abdul's not playing?
No, she is not. Not tonight anyway. Now, how do you see that playing out, Lakers and
Utah? I haven't liked the Lakers' chemistry or mix all year long. So, you know, Utah is a team, again, that has the edge, and the Lakers, you know, losing yesterday to the Clippers, psychologically, obviously, a huge monkey off the back of the Clippers to finally win a Pacific Division championship and be the for at least a day, the stars of Los Angeles for at least a day against the Lakers. I just never have liked the Lakers mix. I think they're old. I think they don't shoot very well. I don't think the coaching's very good. I don't like their bench. I don't like anything about them. And I think Magic Johnson pretty much said the same thing yesterday. He said, they don't do anything great. They're just average. So I got to lean towards Utah to hang on to that 8 spot right now.
Well, the Utah Jazz going into last night's game, they're a great home team, but only 11 wins, 27 losses on the road. This one hurts because I had the Golden State Warriors at home last night, 27-11. They're very, very good at home, but I'm always leery of a team that's on the road that come back their first game at home. Right. But Utah Jazz, man, I love the makeup of this team. They play hard. They bring it each and every night, and they went into Oakland and knocked off the Warriors to solidify the number 8 seed in the Western Conference.
Well, the Lakers do have the advantage with the majority of their games at home yet, right? I think they played 4 of their final 5 at home, so it's a big advantage for the Lakers in that regard. But obviously a huge win for Utah to go in. You're right, made a lot of money this year playing Golden State at home,
right?
As you have, and for them to go in there and win at a very tough place to play in Oakland, and now if Utah, I'm not sure what their schedule looks like the rest of the way of where they're playing on the road, but it's got to be a huge emotional boost for them as well.
Absolutely, and again, a big road win is a 5.5-point dog at Oakland against the Warriors last night to win the game straight up by 6. So let's go ahead and dissect the 5 games for the Spurs and the 5 games for the Oklahoma City Thunder. First of all, how many games do you see the Thunder losing based on the fact that they're at Utah, at Golden State, at Portland, and then they host Sacramento and Milwaukee?
Well, I think they're probably 3-2 at worst, 4-1 at best.
Yeah, I think 4-1 would be reasonable. So then we look at the San Antonio Spurs. They're at Denver. Denver not 100%, but they're the best team in the Western Conference at home. Then they're at home against the problem children of Sacramento. And then they're at the Lakers. They're at Golden State, and they host Minnesota. So if the Thunder go 4-1, really, the Spurs would have to lose twice.
Right.
I'm not sure that's going to happen with or without the injuries because they are so deep.
No, I agree with you. And I think it's obviously it's an advantage for San Antonio when you have Minnesota on there and you also have Sacramento on there. You know, there's two. The Lakers, now they're depends on where they come, where the Lakers are. If they're a game back or 2 games back, by the time that Laker game comes, how much motivation they might have if they know they can't make the playoffs, will they be motivated to play? I think it's probably advantage San Antonio.
It's going to be an exciting 13 days. 13 days left in the regular season. 5 games to go. Oklahoma City Thunder battling San Antonio for that top seed in the West. Eastern Conference. Can anyone knock off Miami in the Eastern Conference?
No.
They might.
No.
They might, but not 4 times.
No, exactly.
In a 7-game series.
I mean, the Bulls and Indiana have a winning record against the Heat in the regular season, and they have a genuine dislike for the Heat. So do the Celtics, obviously, a genuine dislike. But can they beat them 4 times in 7 days and 7 games? And no, I don't. Unless there's an injury. Now, Dwayne Wade said he won't be back until the playoffs starts. I saw that this morning. So if he's not back, then you wonder if there's a cohesion issue, if he's plugged right back in and he's good to go and the team just picks up where they left off, or is there an adjustment? But without Derrick Rose coming back, I don't see how the Bulls are going to be able to beat him. I don't know that the Celtics have enough depth. And the Pacers struggle to score for me. And I just think that they don't have anybody to without Danny Granger there, Roy Hibbert. Yeah, Hibbert's great, but he can't stop LeBron and Bosch.
And David West is a very good scoring player for the Pacers. But again, based on matchups, I don't see it happening as well. But let's talk about the Knicks, the fact they've won 12 in a row. They play extremely well without Stoudemire. Early on, Stoudemire was out. Stoudemire came back. They went in the toilet. I think it's because of turnovers. Yesterday, they were playing, and this team just, they do not turn the ball over. They win a lot of games. Stoudemire is a turnover machine.
Well, they're hot right now. They're playing very well. Everybody loves each other. As soon as they lose a game or two and Carmelo goes 8 for 30 from the field instead of what he's been doing, then they're going to be back bickering at each other again. I just don't know that they have the defensive mentality to be able to – you don't score 125 points in the playoffs. You scored 90, 92. Can the Knicks win games by playing defense and only scoring 90 to 95 points to win a playoff game? That's not the Knicks to me.
You're listening to The Odds Couple on the world-famous Vegas Video Network. My name is Scott Pritchard, founder of PritchardsPicks.com. We're joined by Al, the board man, Scott Whitney, executive producer, owner of the Vegas Video Network, alongside Jacob Cannon, the GM of KSHP AM 1400 Radio, Brett Grant, joining me today. We're talking sports. We're talking sports betting. Feel free to call in live questions at 702-221-7283. That's 221-7283. Live chat questions are up and running on the Vegas Video Network. This is The Odds Couple. Now it's time for Spin to Win.
Yay!
What is Spin to Win, you might be wondering? Well, as professional sports bettors, we know that it's important to think and handicap with your head, not your heart. Emotions cloud judgment. Do not be emotionally attached to any one team or any one game. So today, I am forced, as is Brett, we don't know where this is going to land, but we have one game. The college basketball championship game, Michigan taking on Louisville. Louisville is favored by 4. I'm going to spin to win. I'm going to spin the wheel. Whatever it lands on, I am forced to argue why there's value with Louisville or Michigan. Brett will be forced to take the other side. Let's check this out. Here we go. Spin to win. What do I have? Michigan. Michigan getting 4 value. Why? Underdogs are oftentimes undervalued. I have a lot of respect for the Louisville Cardinals, but you're going to give me 4 points, two best teams in college basketball. The 4 points could help you. Points mean more than opinions. 4 points, pretty significant. It's projected to be a close contest. The 4 points could definitely help you. I think Michigan plus the 4, I see value.
I like the other side. Louisville minus 4 in this spot. You give me Rick Pitino going into the Hall of Fame, the great experience there, the experience of their backcourt with Siva and Russ Smith, their ability to get to the rim. Michigan, I don't necessarily think, is a great defensive team. We know Louisville's a great defensive team. And what do they say about championships? They're one with defense. I like Louisville. You give me a short price of only 4 points. We make our free throws. We don't turn the ball over. We turn you over. I like Louisville.
I like the guard play for Michigan. I mean, again, probably the best guard in all of college basketball, Trey Burke. He's the man. He's the star. Struggled against Syracuse, 1 of 8 shooting. Missed a couple of critical free throws late, but what are the chances of him having 2 tough games in a row?
Well, it's a good question, but this time he's going to have a great defender with him, as opposed to the 2-3 zone where you find spots to hit open shots. He just didn't make his open shots. He'll get chances. And we say one thing about Trey Burke is he's not afraid to keep scooting back to find that spot.
Right.
35 feet, no problem. And he threw up a couple of long ones on Saturday as well that you're thinking, well, a little early in the shot clock, and why are we shooting from that far back going through? But the question is, does he get tired chasing around Russ Smith and Peyton Siva on the defensive side because those guys love to get to the rim. He's going to need a lot of help from his front court mates to be able to stop those guys getting the rim. And you wonder who's got the edge in the matchup-wise going through. These guys for Louisville, they're like jackrabbits. They're all over the place, and they play that pace, that defensive pace, every game all season long, and they've done it for all 4 years they've been with Rick Pitino. And that's one thing that Michigan and Trey Burke might not be used to. And the question is, if he's not, who's there to pick up the slack for him? Will it be Robinson, Stauskas making threes, going through McGarry? He's been terrific. And it's a young team, as we talked about earlier in Michigan. A lot of freshmen and first-year players on that team. Does the spotlight get to them for the national title?
I respect what you say with Louisville. Again, overcoming a double-digit deficit in the last 13 minutes against Wichita State, they turned it on with the full court press. So, I mean, they have that in their back pocket. But again, with Burke being proven and Tim Hardaway Jr., we haven't even talked about his capabilities yet. So, again, interesting. I mean, the line opened 3, 3.5, bet up to 4, 4.5. Right now in Las Vegas, it's a solid 4 everywhere. We're having a great time on the Odds Couple, Vegas Video Network, KSHP AM 1400 Radio. My name is Scott Pritchard, joined by Brett Grant. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back.
Oh, hi. I'm Kelly Clinton. That sucked. I wonder if Joan Rivers is watching.
Oh, please. Oh, my God. Who cares?
I don't have a different one. You know who watches this show? Wayne Newton.
You got that right, Kelly. I think you're absolutely beautiful and talented, young lady. 5, 6, 9, 12. Darker shade.
More camera time for me.
Hey, I wonder if Cher's watching.
Oh, please. I have so many other things to do.
Woo! Hi, I'm Kelly Clinton. I'm the host of Talk Tales, and you're watching the Vegas Video Network.
Welcome back to the Odds Couple on the world-famous Vegas Video Network. I'm Scott Pritchard, the founder of PritchardsPicks.com. You can also check me out, VegasInsider.com. I'm joined by Brett Grant. We would love to have you become a part of the show. You can reach out to us a number of different ways that you can do that. You can email us at OddsCouple@VegasVideoNetwork.com. That's OddsCouple@VegasVideoNetwork.com. Also, we'd love to hear your voice on our show by going with web-based voicemail. Go to our site, Vegas Video Network. On the right-hand side, there's a red bar. Click there, and in the middle of the page, green bar, start recording. Also, live chat questions, Vegas Video Network. Now, if you do miss us live, no worries. Check us out on iTunes, Vegas Video Network, YouTube, Roku. And the call-in number is 702-221. 7283 live questions right here, Las Vegas, 702-221-7283. If you want to talk sports, namely sports betting. Now let's talk frustration. Are you kidding me? We're going to be joined by Brett, his first Are You Kidding Me segment.
First PG-13 version. I've done plenty of R-rated versions of it going through. It's going to be fun.
What do you have,
young man? Want me to go first?
I can't wait to hear what you have to say.
Well, this ties into the national championship with Are You Kidding Me? Referees and the calling of the charges in college basketball. Are you kidding me? That's all we do. Every time a player's running into the lane to make a layup, somebody's sliding underneath them. And because they're outside of that little half arch for McDonald's, and Clark Kellogg drives me crazy. He's in legal guarding position. What? He used to be for 50 years. He's moving. If the defender's moving, it's a block. I thought the call at the end of the game was clearly to me a block and not a charge in one of the games the other day on Saturday in the Syracuse game, I should say, when Trish was going to the basket, chance to tie the game. They called a charge. He fouled out of the game. To me, that was a blocking foul. The guy was clearly moving. And they're allowing these guys, because they're outside of that little arch, to basically be doing anything they want to do, and as long as they're out of the arch, they're calling a charge. It's not a charge. If the defender's still moving, it's a block. Enough of it.
Are you kidding me?
Are you kidding me?
I'm with you, Brett. I actually agree. I realize it's the toughest call in basketball, whether it's the pros or the college game. Is it a block? Is it a charge? Now they have that arch, as you talk about. They pick that up from the NBA.
Right.
I don't like it in the NBA game. I like it even less in the college game.
No, I agree with you. It's one of those things where maybe move it out another foot. But to me, it still is, if the player is moving, it's a block. And there's no question to me that player was still moving. And all they do is look at the feet now. If the feet are outside the arch, they don't look at the body anymore. And if there's guys, and especially if you're the offensive player and you're already in the air and a guy slides over, you're already in the air. You shouldn't be allowed to take a charge at that point going forward because the player's already vulnerable. He's going up to take his shot. I just don't like it.
Overall, how do you think the officiating has been for the March Madness tourney?
Well, I think we've seen some issues with regards to end of game situations and going back and stopping the game to look at how much time was on the clock or make sure his foot was behind the line. And we've seen teams rewarded with timeouts that didn't have timeouts. And then we saw that in the Ohio State game where they stopped the clock and Thad Matta said, hey, I didn't call timeout because I know the other guys didn't have a timeout, yet the referees decided to stop the game to make sure the clock was right. It was still 2.5 seconds or so to go in the game in one of those shots. And I think there's got to be a better way to put that in. Either you check everything, you check nothing, but to check just a couple of things on video or you know, foot behind the line, you can do it like in the Pac-10, or the Big Ten does. If you want to check the foot on the line, you do that at a timeout, a legitimate timeout. You don't call timeout to check the foot going through. So,
do you think, Brett, that we have too many replays or not enough?
Well, I love college football's replay system, which is continue on with the game. And if you get a buzz, we'll stop the game. I like that part of it myself. I think with technology, you can get the calls right. Whether it's baseball, football, basketball, it doesn't matter. With technology, we should be able to get the calls right. I'm a Cardinal fan. We lost the 1985 World Series on a bad call at first base. Don Denkinger, we'll never forget him. The guy was clearly out at first base. They called him safe. The Royals went on to win the game, win the World Series, and that would have been one out away from a World Series win for the Cardinals. So we've dealt with mistakes our entire lives. Armando Galarraga got a no-hitter, a perfect game taken away from him by an umpire on a call that the whole world went, oh, my God, did he just call that guy safe? So we've seen bad calls affect situations. If the technology's there, let's get them right.
I think that's the big point. Let's get it right. My bone of contention is games are too darn long to begin with, and by having replay, revisiting replay, it extends the game even longer. But I tend to agree with your assessment. Let's maybe go with more replays but still cut down the number of timeouts. There are different ways where you can cut, but I'm tired of watching a 40-minute college basketball game take 2.5 hours to play.
No, I agree with you, but I think college football does it right. The game goes on. The coaches aren't involved in it. There's no red flags necessarily. It's just a guy up there watching the game going, he buzzes down to the head referee. He says, we got a problem. Take a break. And then make the assessment and move on. Obviously, the NFL takes too long with it. Major League Baseball, the whole umpiring crew walks into the dugout, all of them. Like, where are you guys all going? Do we need all of you guys to leave? Can't just one guy go look at it? How about we just buzz down to the home plate umpire and say, hey, by the way, that was a foul ball. Okay, he doesn't have to leave the field. That was a foul ball. I called it fair. Guys, whoop, everybody go back. It was a foul ball. I just don't see the point of some of this that they're doing it.
I'm going to switch gears and talk baseball. Josh Hamilton, star player for the Texas Rangers a year ago, signed a multi-million, $125 million contract to play with their nemesis, their division rival, the Los Angeles Anaheim Angels. And Josh Hamilton, the big star studded player for the Angels, started out 1-for-20, 10 strikeouts before finally getting 3 hits yesterday, 3-for-4, but going into that game, 1-for-20, 10 strikeouts. Josh Hamilton, are you kidding me?
Well, the thing with me is Mike Socia leaving him in the four hole against left-handed batters when you have Albert Pujols and Mark Trumbo sandwiched around them as the bread, and he's supposed to be the guy that's the meat in the sandwich, and he's striking out and swings at every pitch. That's the biggest thing to me about Josh Hamilton is there is no plate discipline whatsoever. He will swing at everything.
It's feast or famine with this guy. And again, what is the point if Trout and even Pujols getting on base if this free-swinging dude is striking out? Now, again, we know that he will get his in the end. He's a good, good player. But the other thing I wanted to talk about, too, I mean, professional athletes should have, or I think they have, thicker skin than the average Joe. Again, they can strike out in front of 50,000 fans and millions of people on TV watching 7 times out of 10, yet be in the Hall of Fame.
Right.
I don't know if we're comfortable striking out 7 times in 10. I've made 7 bad decisions since I got out of bed this morning. But again, thick skin, you would think is...
I wish my ratio was that high when it came to asking girls out in high school.
I think that I heard that you led the team in scoring both on and off the court in high school. But maybe I have a hearing problem. I have to say that the reason I bring this up with Josh Hamilton and the reason maybe he's struggling a little bit, the fact that he went back to Texas, is the entire crowd, 45,000 fans booing, heckling. His wife and children called security because they were being heckled in the stands.
It seemed like Hamilton yesterday was a little more acclimated to it in the Sunday night game. He was having fun in the on-deck circle. He was always smiling. He's turning around talking to somebody in the stands. I couldn't tell exactly who it was or if they were telling him what a worthless SOB he was or telling him how much they loved him. I have no idea what they were doing. But he had a good day yesterday. But he had a good day yesterday because he was facing a right-handed pitcher, not because he was facing a left-handed pitcher. And the days before, it was lefty versus lefty, and he's striking out. They're walking Albert Pujols on purpose to get to Josh Hamilton, who then swings at the first three pitches he sees and fouls out or strikes out. And there's Mark Trumbo on deck going, I could hit the lefty. Let me. So I think Mike Socia might, if that trend continues of him not being able to hit lefties, might have to move him down the order a little bit and not put him necessarily in the cleanup hole. Move him down to five or six and let go. If they want to walk Pujols, great. There's Mark Trumbo behind him and then Hamilton back that way.
I actually think that's a great idea. But I would not want to be the one to tell Josh Hamilton, hey, well, I realize we just paid you $125 million to play in Orange County, but we're going to bump you to sixth in the lineup. I don't think that's going to fly.
Yeah,
but it would make sense.
That he is a little too thin-skinned.
Well, that's a good point because Trumbo, last year and this year, hammers left-handed pitching.
He does. I'm just thinking you move him to five. Then they want to pitch. Then the pitchers, if there's already a guy on base or two, If Mike Trout is on base ahead of him or Eric Ibar, now how do I pitch to Pujols? All right, I'll be careful with him. Now, let's say I walk him. Albert walks a lot anyway. You don't have to. Now you've got Trumbo. I got to pitch to one of those two guys. And then if I try to go around both those guys, I still have Hamilton back there, who's in a very good RBI spot still at number five going through. But by that time, if I got a couple guys on and two guys before him, I'm probably scoring a run or two already before I get to Hamilton.
No one is more excited about heading back to Southern California than Josh Hamilton of the Los Angeles Angels. Are you kidding me? This is the part of the show where we're going to put some money into your pocket. How exciting is that? Scott Pritchard alongside Brett Grant, the GM of KSHP AM 1400 Radio. Simulcast on the Vegas Video Network. We're here Monday through Friday, 11 a.m. to 12 noon Las Vegas time. Keep those live chat questions, comments, statements, heckles coming. Live chat, Vegas Video Network, or reach out to the studio line for a live question at 702-221-7283. That's 702-221-7283. Brett and I together are going to put you, actually today, let's do a one and done. Let's just have me put you on the right side because we have no college basketball games, of course, just the one big championship game, and we have no NBA basketball. We do have Major League Baseball. I do want to recap my right side from Friday, over 203 an NBA game, as you heard it live on KSHP and Vegas Video Network. Winner, winner, chicken dinner. Anthony Padilla, my co-host on Friday, has been on a streak. Never bet on a streak to end. He was there, ATS against the spread. Once again, I'm sure he'll want to talk about that as he joins me this coming Friday. Now, we're talking about today's action. I have one play, one time. It's not how many you play. It's how many you win. I'm looking at a Major League Baseball game. The Cleveland Indians off to a very good start. They've been hammering the ball. They're taking on the New York Yankees. The total for this game is 8. I think it's cheap. Red Rover, I love the over.
I already played it. I agree with you. The Indians are one of my surprise teams this year.
You called it.
And did you know, it could be another segment here, but Justin Masterson, who got the win yesterday in Tampa, has now become the third player in the history of baseball to ever defeat both the previous season's Cy Young Award winners in the same year, and he did it in the same week. He beat R.A. Dickey, and then he beat David Price. It's only happened two other times in the history of baseball. I like this Indians team, and I think the Yankees are a team that can score some runs at times, but they certainly give up plenty. And I agree with you. I like the Indians.
Eight is a key number because 5-3, 6-2, 7-1, it's a push. I just don't see seven runs or less being scored in this contest. I'm starting to, I realize it's early, but you called this before the season, and that's the key to making money sports betting is to see it before it happens. The Indians going into the regular season, no respect, but the value, big fat pluses. Again, underdogs are oftentimes undervalued. So good call with Cleveland.
Yeah, Masterson was, again, a big underdog yesterday against David Price, and Price got hammered in his first start, got hammered again in his second start, and the Indians went out and won that game easily yesterday, scoring double digits in Tampa. And actually, the Aces were rocked yesterday. Matt Cain never made it out of the fourth inning, gave up 9 runs in the fourth inning. Steven Strasburg was hammered. Verlander was hammered. Price was hammered. So the big guys were not the big guys yesterday.
Last night, I felt like getting hammered because I do not, will not lay big lumber in a baseball game, but I stepped out yesterday. I love David Price, the Rays at home, and it opened 180, 185, bet up to 200. I laid the 80 cents and got rocked. So again, that's every now and again I'll step out and play a favorite or a good size favorite, but right. will not make a habit of it. And yesterday was a perfect example of that. Again, underdogs are undervalued, and anytime you can deal with pluses, you don't have to be right that often. And hey, you know what? Baseball, anything can happen. One swing of the bat, it's over.
Yeah, and the Indian, when you're getting plus 70, $1.70 with the Indians like I was yesterday, it made sense with the fact that you just look at this team confidence-wise, the way they're playing right now going into it. If I step out and take a big favorite, I might put him and parlay him with another big favorite and save some of that juice and get the two guys together and say, look, if Verlander can win today and Strasburg can win today, I'm not laying $2 twice. I got the two together at $2, and let's just go out and do their jobs, and it might work out.
Baseball, we both know, is a game of streaks. As the next 15 to 18 minutes, we're going to talk Major League Baseball. We're going to talk pro basketball. We've already really addressed, and we'll touch on a little bit more because it's what everyone is talking about, Louisville taking on Michigan in the college basketball championship game. But I do want to touch on the fact that baseball is so streaky. A few short years ago, the Oakland A's won 21 games in a row. I look at early on, we have a couple of trends already. Now, we expect the Houston Astros to lose. They've lost 5 straight games. The Milwaukee Brewers, bit of a surprise, they've lost 5 straight contests. Your thoughts on winning losing streaks?
I always play once a streak hits 3 games, I kind of ride the streak.
Win or lose.
Yeah.
Well, that's actually smart. I have a lot of respect for you, Brett, because most people don't get that. But the idea is you want to ride the wave. You want to ride the streak because you can only lose one time. And yet you can continue to milk that wave, milk that streak. As I say, after the A's won 21 or here, I mean, the Astros and the Brewers both have lost 5 in a row. On the other side of the coin, we have a couple of teams that have won 5 straight, Colorado Rockies. Mm-hmm. That's a surprise. Oakland A's. I love this A's team. I just don't know. I really don't know how they do it. I mean, we're talking about a team a year ago that won the American League West after we all knew Texas had the best team, right. But we also knew the Angels would be right there, and yet the Angels didn't even make the playoffs. Oakland won the division, and here they are again playing small ball with the small payroll, bankroll. How do you not like this team?
Well, I think the thing about the A's, and you look at baseball in general, I spend a lot of time in baseball, whether it's coaching baseball, playing baseball. Baseball is the one game that is all about team, even though it's individual matchups. It's pitcher versus batter 27 times for 27 outs. They're individual matchups. But the chemistry of the A's is absolutely terrific. They got a lot of guys who are playing above their, what I would think would be their normal form going through. You would expect them to bounce a little bit this year. Maybe just not yet. I think eventually, come July, the dog days of summer in August, you might get that bounce out of them. But right now, they're still riding that wave from last season. There's no injuries. They're perfectly healthy. They're pitching great still. Everything's going well for them. Nobody shaves their hairs. They look like a bunch of cavemen out there. They're having fun. I mean, as John Crux said yesterday, he goes, I would have fit in great with that team. It does remind me of the early great successful A's in the early 70s, the Gene Tennis, Reggie Jackson A's in the 72, 73, 74 Vita Blue A's. Those guys hated each other. They would fight like crazy in the dugouts and fight in the locker room, but they would go out and win. But they had great talent. They had a great manager. They had it all going. But these guys are all fun, loving, have a good time, and they don't take themselves all too seriously. But when they get out there between the lines, they feel no pressure. And I think that's very important when it comes to baseball, because if you start to feel the pressure, then that's when you start to slump.
That's a great, great point, and that's exactly what I see with this Oakland team. This year, same as last year, they're loose. But you talk about John Kruk. It does not surprise me that he would say that he would fit in extremely well with this team, because I remember him back in, I believe it was 93, when they went to the World Series, came out of nowhere, gave the Toronto Blue Jays everything they could handle before Joe Carter came to life. But Lenny Dykstra, John Kruk, those guys had fun playing the game.
No question about it. And you look at teams that are hot, and the A's were hot at the end of the last season, and they stole the division on the final day. And you're watching the game last night, the Sunday night game, and it's like the A's didn't exist. It was all about the Angels and the Rangers, Angels and Rangers. And finally somebody said, you realize the A's are the American League West champions, right? And they're playing pretty well right now. They're 5-1 going through. But they're doing it. They're under the radar still. I think probably because of their payroll, they don't have star players. They've got some name players, but they don't have any star players, and they're out there in Oakland. And unfortunately, on the other side of the bay are the world champion San Francisco Giants. So they're not even – it's kind of like being a Clipper fan versus the Lakers. Doesn't matter how good you are, you're still in the shadow of the other team.
Well, look at the Clippers. You bring up the Clippers. Right. They knocked off the Laker girls again yesterday. They swept the Lakers 4 straight games. I don't think that's happened since early 70s, if I remember right, when the Clippers had made the transition from being the Buffalo Braves to the Los Angeles Clippers. But, yeah, this Clipper team, if we segue now into NBA basketball, a couple of concerns. They've won more road games this year than ever before, but still not all that impressive. I'm going on memory, 21-22 road wins up to this point. They're all about home court.
Right.
And the fact is, to get to the NBA final, forget winning it, they're going to have to win on the road in 2 series before they even get to the NBA championship. I just don't see it happening, as much as I like this team.
Unless there's an upset before them, which is a possibility. If you look at, do you see anybody? I'll ask you. In the 5, 6, 7, or 8 hole that could upset somebody in the top half of the bracket?
I really don't. I see 4. I see 1 beating 8. I see 2 beating 7. I see 3 beating 6. Where it gets interesting is 4 and 5. And that's where it's a cluster. It's a log jam, traffic jam. You have the Clippers, you have the Grizzlies, and you have the Nuggets. Now, they all have strengths and weaknesses. Right now, the inside track belongs to Denver to be seeded 3rd. And then you're looking at the Clippers, and you're looking at Memphis, but the Grizzlies, good golly, just a month ago they went into LA and stuck it to the Clippers. So I think that would be a great first round matchup, but chances are they could be on the road for that game, for that series in the first round.
Which would obviously not be good for them going through. But what about the factor of a Chris Paul, the steady hand of a great point guard? Could he be the difference? Because the Clippers early in the year were very good on the road, and they kind of struggled in the middle part of the season. And they had some injuries and some other issues, but now they're getting healthy and seem to be clicking all in all cylinders again. I like the makeup of the team. I love the addition of Chauncey Billups, because you get that veteran leadership in there, and he's a guy and the Clippers have complained a little bit that Billups and Paul are pushing us too hard. Like, well, if your teammates are pushing you too hard, it means you're not working hard enough. And these guys know what it takes, especially Chauncey Billups, knows what it takes in order for you to get to and win a championship.
I love CP3. I think he's a very smart, heady, competitive player. The concern I have, in the past, they've had a very good bench. In the NBA, oftentimes, it's not who is starting. It's who do you have coming off the bench. And their bench, it's been outstanding. Jamal Crawford is a star player for them. The concern I have is Chauncey Billups, he just has not been healthy. He's played very limited. He's a good leader, outstanding player. He's proven he's been there, but he's not healthy. So CP3, as good as he is, he cannot do it by himself. Plus Jordan, their big stud horse inside. He's such a tremendous liability, shooting 41% from the free throw line. So in a close game, your best defensive player, shot blocker. I mean, the guy shoots something crazy, something
sick. You gotta put him on the bench pretty much.
Well, he shoots 64% from the field or something insane, but he can't even be one of your best players can't even be in the game because he's such a liability from the free throw line.
That's a good point. And we saw that hack-a-shack thing for years going on when the Laker girls were winning their championships, as you like to say. They would put Shaq on the line, and now he's doing commercials making fun of his free throw shooting, which is, I think, very funny. But, yeah, that's a very tough decision for Vinny Del Negro. Do I sit down one of my best rebounders, defenders, shot blockers, field goal percentage guys, because he can't shoot free throws, and we're only up by 3 with 3 minutes to go in the game? or we're down three.
I do want to address the Shaq thing, as long as you brought it up, the fact that he's making fun of his lack of free throw shooting today. That's fine. That's good. It's a good thing I wasn't Shaq's coach, because I'm big on playing to your strengths. What is it that makes you you? 7 billion people on the planet, there is only one you. What makes you unique? Shaq was a man-child. He was the man inside of 10 feet playing with his back to the basket. Forget free throw shooting, okay? He's a bad free throw shooter. I mean, it's one of those things I like to give the example. If you're right-handed and you write with your right hand, try improving your weakness. Try writing with your left hand.
Right.
You can practice until you're blue in the face. Your left hand will never be as good as your right hand. So the idea is, if I was coaching the Lakers, and no one asked, but if I were coaching the
sure
Lakers, I would
have
said,
that email.
Shaq, forget free throw shooting. Just man up and protect the basket. It's been documented when he practiced his free throws, the more he practiced, his shooting percentage went down. Accent the positive, baby. That's all I'm saying, Brett.
I tried to do that with piano lessons. It didn't work with my mother either.
No? So we're talking about NBA basketball, 5 games to go, the playoffs right around the corner. Again, we know, and the sportsbooks know this too, you cannot get any value with the Heat. Excluding a major injury to one of the top three, they're going to come out of the East. They're going to have home court advantage. But let's talk about that format. It's like, okay, the Heat will have the best record in all of basketball. They get to the NBA championship. Home court advantage? How much of an advantage, really? It's a 2-3-2 format, meaning three of the first 5 games will be at the Western Conference home court. That's a disadvantage.
It is, and it bounces back and forth. So now you got the good thing about it from a Heat standpoint is if they can steal one of those games on the road, they can go home and win all three and never have to go back on the road. But the odds of that happening, not very often, that the series is decided in 5 games. And we've talked about on Friday, the networks have designed this thing along with the NBA to make sure the series lasts longer than 5 games, because we know how much money they make in Game 6 and Game 7 when it comes to the advertising revenue. I don't like hardly any of the formats. I mean, we talked about the baseball format as well, or the fact that it bounces back and forth in basketball, between the Eastern Conference and Western Conference, back and forth, and baseball used to do that. Now, of course, they decided with the All-Star game. If you're the best, you should get home court advantage, period, end of sentence. Doesn't matter what league you're in. If I'm the best, I get it. If I'm in the East and I get it 10 years in a row, I get it 10 years in a row. Our regular season record should mean something. If you're the number one overall team in the league, that means you're the best team and you get the home court advantage.
That's exactly how I see it. And I remember what the legendary Hall of Fame, late great broadcaster Chick Hearn, voice of the Lakers for 30-some years, told me. He said the reason they do the 2-3-2 format in the NBA Finals is to encourage at least a 6-game series. But to me, it's illogical, because why play 6 months, 82 games, 2 months of playoffs, and then hurry up, let's minimize traveling. We'll go 2-3-2. But in defense of that, to win those 3 middle games consecutively, it's rarely done for the underdog.
No question about that. And the other factor is we take the early series, the first round, second round, and we'll have 2 or 3 days off in between Game 1 and 2 or Game 3 and 4. And it's like, those guys haven't played since Wednesday. It's Saturday afternoon. But yet in the finals, it's every other day. So why don't we do the same thing all the time going through it? Every other day, let's have a game every other day like they do in every other sport.
You're listening to The Odds Couple on the world-famous Vegas Video Network and KSHP AM 1400 Radio. We're going to take a quick commercial break. We'll be back to wrap it up. Stay tuned.
Traditional media believes that after about 3 minutes, you'll tune out. Most Vegas media companies think if it doesn't jiggle, you won't tune in. At the Vegas Video Network, we think both are wrong. The Vegas Video Network is the first and only live online broadcast network that specializes in insider news and expert views about Vegas. We combine great storytelling with the ability to watch when and where you want, on your computer, mobile device, or television. Discover the real Las Vegas. Visit VegasVideoNetwork.com.
Welcome back to The Odds Couple on the world-famous Vegas Video Network. Scott Pritchard, founder of PritchardsPicks.com. You can also check me out on VegasInsider.com. I'm joined by the GM of KSHP AM 1400 Radio, Brett Grant. Let's talk a little golf.
Love it. This is my favorite week of the year when it comes to sports. You have the national championship game tonight in basketball. My Cardinals open at home, which is always a national holiday today. You've got the NBA playoffs getting ready to get underway. Hockey's going in full sport, and it's the Masters, so which is always a wonderful time of the year when you get to Augusta and you see the azaleas. I was there a couple of years ago, and you have those pimento and cheese sandwiches, which are about as bad as a mint julep at the Kentucky Derby, but you have to have one as you go into it. And you've got the best player in the world playing great right now in Tiger Woods. And a golf course that he loves to play in, and he's the favorite, obviously, about 4-1 right now going in. But I think there's some really good live dogs for the Masters this year with some guys that are ready to break out.
Interesting what you say, because I've been to 5 Super Bowls, and it's a tough ticket to get. They're pricey. They're very expensive. Yet, compared to the Masters getting a ticket, it pales in comparison.
Well, you got to go through the lottery and all this other kind of stuff to get a Masters ticket, and you got to send it in 6 to 8 months, a year in advance, hope you get drawn, and then, of course, you got to find somewhere to stay, which isn't easy to do in Augusta, Georgia. Actually, when I went, we had to stay in South Carolina. We couldn't even get a room in our own state, so it was actually closer. But it's an immaculate place. It's unbelievable, and if you've never been there before, you have to make the pilgrimage, just like going to the Kentucky Derby or going to a Super Bowl or going to St. Andrews to go to Augusta National and see that golf course in all its splendor in this week, to be there for the par 3 tournament on Wednesday, which is so much fun, to watch the golfers with their kids hitting shots, and to see Gary Player and Jack Nicklaus and Arnold Palmer playing together for 9 holes. It's just a wonderful place to be. But you've got some wonderful players. Obviously, Rory McIlroy played really well this past week. Tiger took the week off. He was playing and practicing at Augusta National yesterday. They're playing real well. Both of them are, now that Rory kind of got his stuff worked out. But I think you got some guys that are on the cusp of looking for their first wins that are live dogs. And we could talk about that tomorrow, about who I would maybe as my play tomorrow, of who you could pick in the Masters and make some money.
I like that, and that's what I wanted to ask you. I will not play golf or bet it. My question is, do you look at head-to-head matchups when you bet, or do you look at taking big fat numbers on a future bet on who's going to win it all at a big plus?
I do a little bit of the head-to-head matchups, but I love the future play in the Masters for a couple of reasons. You have a track record at the Masters. We play the Masters on the same golf course every year, unlike the U.S. Open or the British Open or the PGA, where they play a different golf course each year. This major is the same golf course every year. You know who plays well on this golf course. So since they Tiger-proofed the golf course, Tiger has not won the golf course, a golf tournament. In the last 10 years, left-handed players have won 5 times. Now, there's only 3 left-handed players, Phil Mickelson, Bubba Watson, and Mike Weir. I don't think Mike Weir's got a chance this year, but those guys in the golf course is favored. I think it's set up for a left-handed golfer, and Bubba Watson could come out and win it again this year going through. But he's not my pick to click, though, this year. I'm looking at a guy who's on the verge of breaking out and going to win it this year.
And we're going to have to tune in tomorrow to hear your player that you've stepped up and bet money on as far as the Masters Golf Tournament goes. You're listening to The Odds Couple on KSHP AM 1400 Radio, simulcast on Vegas Video Network. Scott Pritchard along with Brett Grant. We have the NCAA College Basketball Tournament Final Championship tonight. Louisville favored by 4 total, from 137.5 bet up to 138, 38.5. Right now it's at 139. Louisville, 9 consecutive games have gone over the posted total. The point spread is 4. Before we go, who do you like?
Well, I tend to lean to Louisville. I just think it's a short price, and if you look at the numbers, I think Louisville probably should be maybe a 5 or 6 point favorite in this spot. Even though Kevin Ware being out, their depth is a little suspect. I just gotta favor Rick Pitino, and I just their ability to close teams out. If they get down, they don't panic. I'm gonna choose defense, and I think that's Louisville.
Now, on my right side, obviously, I came up with a play in baseball. But as far as everyone wants an opinion on this game, it's a high-profile game, college basketball championship game. I played over 137.5, again, based on the fact that 9 straight games for Louisville have gone over. I'm not saying that you should play over 139, because if it falls 138 or 139, you're going to be upset. I'll be happy because I won, but still, I'm about numbers as much as anything else. And one last thing I do want to address, because we promote all sports. If we're going to talk golf, we are definitely going to talk women's basketball. college basketball championship for women's basketball tomorrow night. UConn
and Louisville
taking on Louisville. Wow, what a year!
Rick Pitino's busy.
I see
he's coaching two teams. He made the Hall of Fame. By the way, we should mention congratulations to Jerry Tarkanian, UNLV legendary coach, who was elected today to the Naismith Hall of Fame. Well deserved and a long time coming for. Guy who probably coached the greatest college basketball team ever in 1990s, running Rebels.
It was great to be a Rebel fan in the early 90s. Still is a great time to be a Rebel fan. They've continued the legacy with home court dominance that started back with Jerry Tarkanian, of course. And what we're talking about now is I have a lot of respect for UConn women's basketball. Right. The fact that they played Notre Dame four times and finally yesterday they knocked them off. For Brett Grant, my name is Scott Pritchard. This is the Vegas Video Network on KSHP AM 1400. We'll see you tomorrow and tune in 11 o'clock tomorrow.